Bereishis chapter 20. So this chapter is one more chapter in the series of wanderings. This is how Avraham himself calls it later. The series of wanderings or travels of Avraham. And the story starts, Vayisa Misham Avraham. Avraham traveled from there more to the south, Arzei HaNegev, or to a place called Negev, which is maybe called Negev, and on that name we call Negev South or something like that. So he traveled from there to this place called Gerar, or, and he gives the location, Ben Kodesh and Ben Shir, and these are two locations which are apparently, at the time that this pasuk was written, were more known. So we don't know where Arzei HaNegev is, or we don't know exactly where Gerar is, but it's a place between Kodesh and Shir. I think that's how we should read it, or maybe it's just giving the location in three different ways. I'm not sure. But this, it doesn't give a reason for why Avraham traveled from where's Sham. So Sham seems to be going on what we had before. It was a Mokim Ashram HaCham. It's interesting, the same word Sham. And in the morning after Sodom was destroyed, Avraham went to the place in which Ashram HaCham is Pnei Hashem. And this, we assume that this is somewhere in Eilonei Mamre, in Hevron, somewhere close to Hevron, where he was having the discussion or tefillah that he had about Sodom. It doesn't give a reason why, but we can assume that Avraham, in all these places, although like part of the whole story, as we're explaining, is how Avraham had success. He always found friends and allies and ways of being able to live in all these strange places, which were not his homeland. He still seems to not have an actual like settlement. He wasn't really settled in any of these places. So whatever had happened, political winds changed or whatever, and he wasn't able to live anymore. And Hevron, the economical situation changed. Avraham seems to have been a traveler by temperament. He was traveling around, finding somewhere where life will be better. Of course, there's the story of the destruction of Sodom in between, which caused Rashi and others to speculate, or however you want to call it, to speculate that this must have something to do with that. Maybe some of the destruction of Sodom sort of poured over to where he was. Maybe the story of Lot and his daughters somehow caused issues from him. Because, of course, part of the story is how Avraham separated from Lot. And now, when Lot went back to the mountain, Hahoro, which is where he went, and the mountain is sort of the same place as Hevron, I think, is the mountain, the hill country. So possibly Lot sort of came back and started to encroach on Avraham's land. Any case, he's going to Gerar. And now, of course, in Gerar, there's already a local establishment, there's already a local king named Avimelech, Melech Gerar, the king of Gerar. We shouldn't imagine these kings as some emperor. These are kings in the sense of like kings of some little area. And he has a problem with him, and very similar to the problem he had earlier in the beginning of the story. One of the first travels of Avraham we learned about, which was his travel to Mitzrayim. Now, of course, there's sort of a question here, which is that there's some story keeps on happening, but it's not, if you want to do like a literary analysis, then maybe it's like a question on the story. But if you also think of it as representing a certain kind of reality, of course, it's not only there to tell us the reality, it's to represent the kind of relationships and the hardships that Avraham had. Then obviously these are the kind of problems that you have when you're traveling. At least that's how the story is presented. I wasn't there. And as we discussed then, one of the problems is that you lose your sovereignty. Even the sovereignty that a man has over his household, over his wife, in some sense gets lost if he goes to a friend, a strange country where maybe they don't recognize his marriage or something like that. And Avraham has his way of protecting himself from this. And it worked for Pare and it worked for the Melech. And it's an interesting thing to notice the differences between Pare and the Melech. Of course, Pare was some kind of an emperor. The kings of Egypt were great kings already in those times. Avimelech is probably a much smaller king than Pare, the king of Egypt. And it seems that because of that, and we'll see later about Yitzchak, the same thing, there's a different kind of power dynamic between Avraham and Avimelech than there is between Avraham and Pare. And there's a different level of discussion also between them. And there's more dialogue here. So Avraham says about Sura that she's his sister, and this was his way of protecting her, protecting himself. Doesn't entirely say what. And Avimelech sends for her and takes her. Now we get an interesting story, which is a revelation. So this seems to be something that didn't happen to Pare, right? Pare got makas. He got plagues or whatever exactly the maka that it says over there means. He didn't get a explicit message from Hashem, from God, to explain what's going on. But the Avimelech gets a dream, an explicit dream. And it seems also that from what we can glean from the stories here, it seems like the people that lived in the places where Avraham traveled, in other words, in Eretz Canaan and Eretz Pelishtim, later we have Yaakov and Lavan, seems to have a closer theological affinity with Avraham. So, of course, the story of Avraham breaking idols and arguing about the truth faith is nowhere to be found in the whole Sefer Bereshis. But, and contrary, in some sense, we do see that between him and Pare, there isn't really a dialogue between him and Melech, and the same thing we had earlier between him and Malki Tzedek, the king of Shulem, which was another local king of Sodom. There seems to have been some theological sharing, and the same God, in some sense, that speaks to Avram can speak to him in a dream. We didn't have the same exact language of Avram. We had earlier languages, Bamarze, which might be the same thing as a dream, but here we have an explicit dream of the night. In a dream at night, this is later Yaakov, we have the same thing that God comes to him in a dream. These are differences that should be noted. In any case, Elohim, Hashem, God, comes to Avimelech in a dream, and he tells him, you will die because of this woman that you took. She is the wife of a man, Bilas Baal. Now, Avimelech, loikor Avelel, it seems to me that this should be read as before, right? This dream comes to Avimelech before he touches her, before he comes close to her. Of course, that's the point of the dream, to save Surah, right? It's not clear if the dream is to save Avimelech from doing a sin, but apparently it's to save Surah, because this is the story of how God protecting Avram and his wife from all kind of problems. So it says he didn't, and it seems like he's trying to say he wasn't planning to had he known. So Avimelech turns to God, and he answers, and he said, Adonai, Lord, this is the same language that Avram uses to Hashem, and famously before Adonai Yitkevufke, when he said by the Brisbane Epsorim, and the same language that Avram has when he talks to Hashem about Sedoim, Adonai, he says, Agoy gam tzadik tarik, will you kill also a righteous one? In other words, I am the righteous one. And he says, he told me that she's his sister, and she also told him that he is her brother. I've acted in besam levavi, which means innocently, without bad intent. With my clean hands, I haven't acted with bad intent. And Hashem answers him. Hashem answers him in the same dream. I know that. He says, I know that you are innocent. Therefore, I am making sure that you do not sin. It seems like Hashem is telling Avimelech, okay, if you are such an innocent tzaddik, righteous person, so then I actually came to save you from sin. Besides for just saving or protecting Sarah, I'm actually coming to save you too, because you don't want to sin. Of course, this can be read more cynically if you want to read the dialogue. More cynically, you could. I think it's not clear to me that there's a necessity to do that. It's possible that this is all exactly that. In other words, Avram actually was a shtekel choshen b'ksheirim. Avram was too suspicious of Avimelech more than he should have been. And God is sort of intervening also to save Avram from himself, right? To save Avram from his mistake, so to speak, of saving Achoyzi, which actually was the thing that led to Avimelech to take her, because he thought he was protecting himself. Turns out it also puts him in danger. And this is, of course, a weird thing with Avram's strategy of protection. It seems like it opens Surah up to more danger, although it seems to protect him, because that's the way they won't kill him or something. And now, after this sort of nice and innocent piece of dialogue, Hashem continues and says, give him back his wife, and he will pray for you and you will live. Because he is a prophet, this is the only time in Sefer Bereshis I think that the word prophet is mentioned. Especially, definitely the only time that it's said on Avram that he's a prophet. It's not clear what this word Kinovi he was doing here. Something seems to be saying something like, he is mine, he's a prophet of me, and therefore he can pray for you, or therefore I care about him. Not clear to me entirely what this word is saying. And there's a threat, a very explicit threat: if you do not return her, you will die. Not only you will die, everything that belongs to you will die. So this is the end, and that's how it ends, right? It doesn't finish on a conciliatory note, it finishes on this like threatening note. So Avimelech wakes up in the morning, and as befits for the way the dream ended, he calls all of his slaves, all of his household. He tells them the story, he tells them that they're very scared. They were threatened. And then he calls Avram to have a dialogue with him, and calls him and he asks him, what did you do to me? What did I sin to you that you've brought this great sin on me and on my kingdom? You've done things that are not done. This is very interesting because this language, Mas Mashleyosi, is the language we have later by Dina. V'chein Leyosi, things that are not done. It's like a very strong statement of a taboo, right? Things that are just not done. It's not done to take a married man's wife. And it seems like Avimelech is blaming Avram for what else always happened. It's not done to call your wife your sister and then cause for her to be taken as if she's not married and as if I didn't know. And he's claiming to be innocent because he didn't without knowing. That's the first. That's just a piece of rebuke. And then there's another V'yemer Avimelech Avram. It's another style of the Mikra always. There's sometimes two statements of Vayomer, someone said, and then what he said, without anything in between, which is, there's different interpretations of what this stylistic thing might mean. Some people say it means that there's always an implied answer, that we should imagine ourselves what he answered, we don't have to know what he answered. But sometimes I think it just means there's like another, it seems not clear to me here how you could read it as like something that Avram is answering. In other words, like it's a sort of obvious why, and or not clear, or it's just like this is a sharp rebuke, and it's not really a question, right? There isn't a question. It's a rhetorical question. What have you done? It's not a question. And the next statement and the next part, piece of dialogue, he's actually asking him. Okay, now that I've screamed at you, what did you see? Why did he do this thing? That's really asking for an explanation, and for that, Avram actually gives an explanation. You'll remember that when Paray had a similar question or a similar rhetorical question to Avram, there was no answer because obviously he wasn't actually looking for the explanation. In some sense, the explanation was obvious. Here, since Avimelech is claiming his innocence, so it's sort of he needs an explanation, something like, why do you think I'm as evil as Paray? And Avram answers, he says, Ki amarti, I have thought, right? I've said means I've thought. Rak en Yerusalim amukmazed, there's no fear of God in this place, and I will be killed because Aldvarishti, because of my wife. So what his Yerusalem is, and this is another sign that there's a shared kind of morality, which is what Yerusalem is supposed to mean. So that's his first answer, and it seems that this is implying, but I was wrong, right? Amarti, I've thought, and Yerusalem turns out there is Yerusalem, and the other him even himself spoke to you, however you want to understand that or interpret that. This is like a shared idea of what of the God that exists, and also a shared idea of what that God demands, right? Yerusalem. Belief in a God always demands a certain kind of moral behavior. And then he goes on further to justify himself. And he says, V'gam amna, also it's true that she is my sister. In other words, I haven't entirely lied. This is kind of weird because like, why would he, like it's like giving a technical excuse. Like, oh, I didn't lie because technically she's my sister. She is the daughter of my father. Bas aviach lo basimi. And now there's a question if this should be taken literally. Maybe as we've seen sometimes when it says brother, like Avram calls Lot his brother, it doesn't mean literally his brother, it could mean niece, maybe she was just his niece. That's how Rashi understands it at least. And in other words, he's saying it wasn't the full lie, so maybe there's some, it's passive, I'm thinking that there's some meaning to this explanation where it's not just like finding a technicality that he didn't technically lie, which seems kind of dumb. Possibly what it means is, and this might explain also the whole Achozi thing, because a sister is someone over who the way the society was accepted and then was that an older brother, if the father is not around at least, has some kind of ownership, is supposed to be taken care of a sister. And that's why later we saw by Pare, he gives her money as if it's like that her dowry goes to her brother. And he's saying, it's not entirely incorrect that I don't have this kind of relation. I don't have this responsibility over her. That's why me saying achosi might be, in some sense, more protection. Maybe that's also something that was more recognized in some sense. Like the king can take your wife. Maybe he can't take your sister without paying you, as we saw paridus. So like there's a recognition of this like family obligation, but maybe not of the marriage kind of thing. Which is still kind of weird, but that seems to be the logic of the story. And then he gives, goes on to say, Ka'asher hissu oisi alihim beis avi, and this is an interesting pasuk because the word alihim is always plural, right? Alihim, like ba'alim, is always plural. It's, if you want to translate it entirely literally, alihim, the word alihim should always be translated as gods or the gods, ha alihim, the gods, not God. Of course, this might be like a remnant of a polytheistic language, or just might be what's called a royal plural, like it's derech kovod, it's a way to speak and a respectful way of someone to speak of him in the plural. But in any case, almost always it's conjugated in the singular. So we have Elohim Omar, not Elohim Amru. This is one of the only psukim in the Torah where there's actually a conjugation also in the plural. It says His Oisi Elohim. It doesn't say His Eh Oisi. They have caused me to wander. And they've caused me to wander. And I told my but again, this is assuming something that Rav Melech would understand. There's such a concept in his world also. Of course, this is Avram's like translation of Lech Lecha, right? Lech Lecha was a command. That's the Jewish language. Like we say, God commanded him. But in Rav Melech's language, we don't say, he didn't say, God commanded me to wander. He said, the gods have caused me to wander. And of course, what would that mean? Maybe that means that the circumstances caused them to do that and so on. And I've told her, I've asked this wife of mine, to do me a favor, Zechastech, this is the goodness that you will do to me. Whatever place we come to you, tell, say, Ochihi, say he is my brother. I think that what he's doing is giving more context. He's saying, look, maybe you personally are a Yerelihim. Maybe you personally won't take a man's wife, but, and kill him, right? But you have to understand that I'm a wanderer. I've been going to all these places and I created myself this rule. Wherever we go, you'll say, he's my brother and that will protect us. So it's not something particularly, it's not personal in some sense. Okay, that's the end of the dialogue between Avram, this little dialogue between Avram and Melech. Then what Avimelech does, he seems to be trying to be meratz Avram, to get back on his good side. He takes tzoin, animals and slaves, and gives them to Avram, and gives back his wife. And that's the second thing, weird order, right? It seems like he's, in one hand, he's acting as if she would have been his sister, and giving him the payment, just like Pare did. On the other hand, he's really paying him sort of for his trouble. And Avimelech says, okay, this my land is before you. You can sit, live in there wherever you want. And of course, this is sort of revealing to us the background that wherever Avram goes, he has a problem where he can't just, Toiv Banech Hashev is a great promise, is a great sort of offer of protection from the king of this area. We're saying, you could live here, choose yourself a place that's open or something, and you could live here. In other places, people will not let him. Okay, and then he says Tesora. Avimelech tells Tesora a kind of cryptic language. We don't seem to know the idiom, what exactly it means. She says, I gave an elef kes of 1,000 silver to your brother. Whether this is 1,000 silver separately, besides for the tzoyin of akiv avodah mishpachas, or it's the same, I don't know. It says hine elach kses einayim lechol ashritach va'es kol v'nechachas. This is a covering of the eyes for everything that is with you, and you have seen it, and you've seen everything, something like that. It seems to mean something like, please accept this as a kind of bribe. And that's what I most probable reading that I could think of. It's like saying, okay, I've paid you or paid your so-called brother, right? Your husband, really. And it will be, it's like a cover-up. This will, maybe Avimelech is trying to say, don't tell anyone the scandal that what happened here. In any case, and now we have a very interesting postscript to the story, which is sort of revealing that the story was written in this backwards way and didn't say that this happened before. So before we had Elohim, Hashem came to Avimelech and just asked him nicely, please don't sleep with this woman. And now suddenly, and we had it then also, and the next word he said, get Avram to pray for you because otherwise you will all die. There will be a great problem. And now Avram accepts the gift, sort of accepts the apology and prays Espal Avram Elohim. And Hashem heals Avimelech, his wife, his slave girls, and they have children. Finally, it tells us, this is the first time they have the Shem Havai and this parsha, also interesting thing. Apparently, the punishment of this was that all of Avimelech's wives and slaves or any kind of women that he had around him were not giving birth. And of course, this is a little bit of a weird thing because we're supposed to read the story as happening in one night. So were they all scheduled to give birth that night and couldn't give birth? Or does this mean something, some broader kind of sickness or something that also causes infertility, but really was that? Or maybe the story really took place over a longer period of time. We don't know, but what is interesting to notice is how, like, until now there's like this dialogue, and finally we found out that all this time Avimelech is sort of under threat, right? He's always suffering this otzer otzer bad kol rechem, and only after Avram's praise to Hashem to heal him, sort of to forgive him, is that they get healed and forgiven.